Welcome to Artrageous, a weekly podcast about the truly outrageous stories in the art and design world. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Artrageous. I promised something more fun and lighthearted this week, and I think I found the perfect thing. I had a few ideas in mind, but when I found out about Pepsi launching a new logo redesign last week, or probably 2 weeks ago by the time this episode drops, I couldn't resist working it into the episode schedule for this week. And you know what? I will never turn down a good story that I not only find at the perfect time, but is also one that we can enjoy for many years to come. But the story for today isn't quite what you might think. Since everyone's talking about this new 2023 redesign, I mean, you can simply Google it and find all kinds of stuff and it'll pop up. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode, but I have something even better for today that is perfectly on topic. Now, the reason I said redesign and new logo is because when I was coming up with episode ideas for this podcast, I had an item on my list for the 2008 Pepsi logo redesign that was just absolutely ridiculously nonsensical. Sounds like the perfect thing for a podcast about the truly crazy stories of the art and design world, right? But considering the Pepsi Harrier Jet episode was, gosh, I guess it's now more than 10 episodes ago now that I think about it, but in my mind, it was more recent. So I was pushing the episode back mostly because I didn't want to turn this podcast into a media platform to completely dog on Pepsi literally every chance I could get. I mean, after this episode, I'm just waiting for the day I lose a Pepsi ad sponsorship opportunity because of one of these episodes. But I won't look a gift horse in the mouth because the timing for the launch of the new 2023 logo is just too perfect. Quick note before we get started. As usual, I have visuals for this episode in the show notes. If you head on over to the episode description, there's a link there where you can see pictures or things that I'm talking about in case you're wondering what I'm referring to, or if you're like me and just want to see things and follow along a bit to really wrap your head around what I'm saying. Admittedly, that's the biggest pitfall of the podcast format for art and design type shows because it's not like a video where I can put things on the screen at the same time. But hey, working around it with the show notes, so check those out if you're interested and want to follow along. So let's go back in time, and let's go even a bit further than 2008, just to get a really good picture of what's happening here. And when I say a bit further, heck with it, let's go back to the beginning for a super quick minute, because what you might not know is that Pepsi was invented by an American businessman named Caleb Bradshaw in 1983. He started out as the owner of a pharmacy in North Carolina and created a drink to help people addicted to morphine. Originally called Brad's Drink, the logo looked like a long postage stamp with some old-timey Western font in blue lettering. This was what I guess you would call the official logo from 1893 until 1898. To me, the name Brad's Drink sounds more like the name of a frat house jungle juice concoction than a marketable beverage. And maybe someone agreed with me on some level, because in 1898, they renamed the drink to Pepsi Cola. Okay, well, why that? Well, it's not just a random name pulled out of a hat, because it sounded fun. The name comes from the drink's two main ingredients, pepsin and cola nuts. It doesn't sound like it took a real marketing genius to come up with that one, but I would argue that the new name was a lot better. The logo, on the other hand, I guess it was good for the time, but by changing it from blue to red and giving it some swirly things, it's giving me real Coca-Cola vibes. Which makes sense because Coca-Cola has and probably always will be Pepsi's main competitor. For years, I'm talking from 1898 to 1962, which if my math is correct, that's 64 years. So for 64 years, Pepsi went through 7 or 8 different iterations of this red script logo that looks like a head-to-head battle with Coca-Cola. I think we can guess who won that battle just by opening up a refrigerator or walking down the aisles of any grocery or convenience store. So how did they change things up and start to make their own space in the market visually? First things first, they brought back the blue from the original Brad's Drink logo. In 1951, Pepsi introduced a prototype logo that included their 1950 redesigned design, but they put it on a bottle cap graphic. What's interesting about this logo is that the bottle cap and brand name are at this weird but unique side angle that almost gives it a 3D effect despite it being a flat two-color logo. well, three colors if you count the white negative space and background. This was also the first time that the infamous tricolor wavy circle graphic made its appearance. With the next two versions of the logo, the bottle cap was flattened and viewed more head-on, but the script font that looked so much like their competitor was finally gone for good. Instead, it was replaced by this black block-lettered font. In the 1965 logo redesign, Pepsi-Cola was shortened to just Pepsi, which makes sense if they're trying to further establish themselves as their own brand and compete with Coca-Cola. Looking at the timeline graphic I'm referencing, between 1962 and 1991, the logo wasn't modified too significantly. Just basic changes of modernizing and cleaning up the design to streamline it a bit and keep it looking more modern. I think in logo design, that's one of the hardest things is trying to create a design that won't become outdated in a couple years. As with all things branding and marketing, there's really no hard and fast rule about the lifespan of a logo design. But I think it's kind of fair to say that a good professionally designed logo lasts a company about 10 years. Looking at Pepsi's logos on a timeline, they clearly didn't get that 10-year lifespan memo between 1898 and 1907 because they had 5 logo changes in just 9 years. I will say that after that, starting with that 1907 design, they slowed their roll a lot and kept that one 1907 logo for 27 years before making another change. And even after that, the timeline's showing some better time spans between logo redesigns. If we look at the entire timeline, I'm talking about from its inception in 1896 until today in 2023, that's over 127 years. Pepsi has had a total of 21 different logos. I don't really want to get into the specifics of every logo because different generations of the logo are all kind of the same, and that's not really the story here. But I will say that nothing really too terrible was happening with each of these logos. That is until 2008. Now, I do want to make it clear that it's not the logo itself that's bad. It's a strong logo, and I really like it as a next step for the Pepsi brand. If anything, it's almost a textbook illustration of all modern design trends with its concise red, white, and blue circle icon. It's the most readable and legible of all the Pepsi logos we've seen so far. It's simple, it's to the point, it's versatile. The 2008 logo is a good logo, but its story is where this episode really picks up. In October 2008, Pepsi announced that it would be redesigning its logo and rebranding a lot of its products by mid-2009. I'm going to guess that this was a little too big of a job for any in-house design that Pepsi may or may not have had because they chose to hire a New York-based brand consultant agency called Arnell Group, led by a man named Peter Arnell. He's an American designer and branding executive known for creating products and brands and campaigns for some really big name companies. Looking at this list, I'm seeing Chrysler, Reebok, McDonald's, Samsung, DKNY, Ray-Ban, just an incredible resume of design work. Except for that botched Tropicana redesign in 2009, but that's a whole other episode. So when Pepsi came to the Arnell Group and contracted their design services to create a new logo, it almost sounds like it would be a walk in the park for such an experienced design firm. Add the $1 million price tag as the cherry on top, and heck yeah, Arnell said let's do it and got to work. Now, if you're in the marketing world, you might be familiar with what a design brief is and everything that goes into creating a new design. It's pretty similar to what a project proposal is in other industries. Well, as part of the 2008 Pepsi logo rebrand project, there was a 27-page design proposal called Breathtaking Design Strategy. This PDF was somehow leaked, and it's what I'm calling the most insane and absolutely hilarious design document of all time. I guess if you're going to pay a company literally $1 million to redesign a logo, you want to make sure you get your money's worth. And I guess the design group would also want to make sure that they can justify having clients pay them stupid amounts of money for the work that they do. After all, it's just a few clicks of a mouse to make a great logo, right? So why should they get paid that much? Imagine them sitting down at a table with Pepsi and saying, "Yeah, we kind of rotated the logo a bit and made the wavy line thingy in the middle more diagonal and uneven. Here's your new logo. Thanks for the $1 million." No, that's ridiculous. All sarcasm and silly jokes aside, in reality, I'm going to take an educated guess that the Arnell Group wanted to really show off their thought process behind the redesign and make sure that their design decisions were justified and explainable and made sense. But this document, sometimes when I'm pulling my hair out over lack of creativity, maybe I would benefit from whatever the designers here were on, because this design document is completely unhinged. I've included a link to a copy of this document in both the episode description and the show notes, so I highly encourage you to follow along because this document is just amazing. I won't go through all 27 pages word for word, really it's just the highlights, but it's so nonsensical that it is just absolutely hilarious. Let's take a look at this thing. Looking at page one, it's a boring cover page. The second page is a document section divider page, so not much to say about that. The third page starts talking about and diagramming the trajectory of innovation on a horizontal axis with Pepsi's historical and brand ethos, or DNA, as an upward arrow, and how investment in that company DNA will, quote unquote, allow us to move out of the traditional linear system and into the future. Okay, so they know how to talk the big corporate talk and try to get investment. It's a little gag-worthy in terms of playing the corporate America game, but nothing too crazy. Page 5 acts like they don't know what they're going to put the beverage in because the bottles were a relic of 1910 and cans are so 1970s. If we take the document literally, then a question mark-shaped juice box might have been the way of the future in 2009, but let's move on to the next page where things really start to get weird. Page 6 is titled Universal Design Principles and features a lot of concentric circles in a lot of different sizes. But hey, at least they're all aligned across a horizontal line with, wait a minute, is that a timeline below it going back to 3000 BC? Yes, it is. This is just an absolutely bizarre and honestly highly pretentious timeline featuring the Mona Lisa and the golden ratio under the 300 BC column. Even though we know from a past Artrageous episode that the Mona Lisa was from the early 1500s. So good job with that timeline there. There's also reference to the duality and balance of feng shui and its popular black and white graphic. And of course, if you mention the Mona Lisa, you also have to include Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, right? At least they got the date a bit more correct, but 5,000 years of shared ideas in design philosophy? That's a weird way to be looking at all of this. Then positioning Pepsi on the timeline in 2009 to be the next big thing in that timeline? That's just a little conceited, don't you think? That's not about the Pepsi brand, that's about the designers putting themselves on the timeline of design philosophy and strategy. But okay, I'll roll with it for now. Let's look at page 7, where, oh look, another timeline. This time it's about the different shapes of Pepsi bottles, which I'm not gonna lie, is kinda cool to see how the bottles have changed over the years. The first jug-looking thing in 1989 is kinda cool. Could you imagine walking around chugging cola out of that thing? The one I don't quite get, though, is the one with a soap dispenser-looking thing on top of it from around, like, 1915. I tried to look up pictures, but I just couldn't find anything on this one. Then, on the bottom half of the page, why are all of those outlines lined up like that? I mean, if you want to fill up a page space in a weird way, I guess that's the way to do it. I mean, they're bottles, but bottles are bottles. They're mostly the same shape, and we can see that shape without this ridiculous graphic, but okay, you do you, Pikachu. Then we get to page 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. 9 pages of bizarre sets of more somewhat meaningless circles, yet again, where they're saying they are tracing the Pepsi DNA and looking at the geometric perimeter oscillations of each of the 9 logos between 1896 and 1998. Perimeter oscillations? What in the world? There's been a lot of fancy foo-foo talk in here that goes way over my head, but perimeter oscillations? I tried to look it up, and dude, even Google doesn't know what you're talking about. All of those search results just tie back to this insane document. I guess not only were they creating a new logo, but apparently they were also trying to contribute to theoretical physics as well. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the idea of designing things based on circles and ovals alone is more of a 21st century design trend. I'm thinking back in 2017 when there was this design challenge where you had to use just 13 circles to draw an animal. As far as I know, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but using circles and ovals in that way to create illustrations and logos wasn't a thing back in 1898. So this page just seems super weird. But once we get past that and get into section C, talking about projecting Pepsi's future and applying universal laws to establish a blueprint for the brand, our old friend Mona Lisa shows up again to show us how artists and architects have proportioned their works to approximate the golden ratio, because the golden ratio plays an essential role in the human perception of beauty. Okay, so where is the golden ratio in the Pepsi logo? I want to see that overlay, and then maybe this page might make some finite amount of sense. And oh wait, that's the next page. Looking at this, you'd literally think you're looking at a vague and incomplete blueprint for how to build a rocket ship. But no, it's just a bizarre exercise in explaining how the new Pepsi logo came to be in a weird step-by-step format. At least step 8 somehow magically gets us to the final logo and just flat out states that the Pepsi ratio is aesthetic geometry. And don't worry if you didn't understand what page 19 was talking about, because page 20 is there to continue to just be as unhelpful and confusing as the page before. If you didn't understand the scales and dynamic relationships of the new 2008 Pepsi logo after page 19, well, you won't after this page either, but at least it has a nice layout and is inclusive of both circles and squares when referencing that golden topic of the golden ratio. And if this document wasn't already insane enough, page 21 is where they really start losing it and start getting into the magnetic field of the Earth and how this relates to the Pepsi logo. Ah, yes, I knew they were trying to tell us how to build a Pepsi rocket ship to escape Earth's gravitational pull. I mean, isn't it obvious looking at their graphics that a complete understanding of the Earth's magnetic field are essential to understanding their so-called Pepsi globe dynamics and the emotive forces that shape the gestalt of the brand identity? Clearly, I'm not educated enough in aeronautical engineering to understand anything here. This document is making me think I will never make it as a graphic designer and should probably just throw in the towel now. Or maybe I'll just start designing using Comic Sans from now on, because clearly I have the IQ of a jelly bean and I'm barely even qualified to design for a clown rental costume company. But I digress. Although not completely, because the next page literally turns the Pepsi logo into clowny smiley faces. The page says one identity, multiple emotions. But I'm getting more of a multiple personality identity disorder than multiple emotions. And if you can't see the bipolar smiley faces on page 22, then don't worry, page 23 makes them a little bit bigger for you. I'm going to skip page 24 because it's more geometry and I didn't do too well in math in high school. Although I will admit, I do halfway understand the top half of this page, even if how it's being related to the Pepsi brand on the bottom half of the page is total malarkey. But page 25 has colors. The document says that the color palette is derived using a scientific method of color assignment based on the product's essence and primary features. What? First of all, why is caffeine-free Pepsi yellow? I never understood that. But on this page, they took the can colors for each of the different product lines. We're talking Pepsi, Pepsi Max, Diet Pepsi, caffeine-free Pepsi, and caffeine-free Diet Pepsi, and found that can color's location on a color wheel. Wow, that's some real middle school art class level science you have going on there. But I will admit that there is some science behind the colors that they have highlighted and the subjective emotional properties that they're noting. I have an episode on that planned soon, so I can't totally poo-poo on this page too much. If anything, this page makes the most sense out of all the pages in this whole entire thing. Which is a nice breath of fresh air that makes you think we might actually be getting somewhere, right? But no, the last two pages finish off with the grand finale of attraction theory and the gravitational pull of a Pepsi can in a store aisle. They literally compare a typical light path to a typical shopping aisle, saying that they're both a straight line. Then they have this diagram showing the light path with gravitational pull of what I'm guessing is the sun, and then compare that to the gravitational pull of Pepsi in the shopping aisle, insinuating that the strong branding of Pepsi is going to be enough to pull people away from the end of the aisle and gravitate and change course into the orbit of the Pepsi product. And if that wasn't enough, well, there's a relativity of space and time diagram, too, that makes absolutely zero sense when it's compared to the Pepsi proposition of the Pepsi aisle, whatever that means. Also, I'm not sure what kind of weird orby spaceships the human silhouettes are standing by in the three diagrams at the bottom of the page, but I am now absolutely convinced that this document is the start of some kind of secret instructions to building a spaceship or interdimensional portal into the Pepsi universe, as depicted on the final page. Not only do you have the Pepsi globe, or Pepsi planet, as they're calling the logo, but if you take a diagram of an atom and replace the electrons with the Pepsi logo, you start to get the Pepsi galaxy. The more and more Pepsi logo electrons you add, the more and more you start to see the Pepsi universe. You can completely ignore the discussion of universe expansion and light years on the left side of the page because that right side is just grade A. And there you have it, guys, an absolute masterpiece for $1 million. I swear this is not a brand deck, but a PhD dissertation of quantum mechanics just to pitch a logo change of making that logo from horizontal to like slightly more vertical. I think I need to collect my sassy self here for a second before we continue because I'm just having way too much fun with this episode. But when we come back, I can't promise that I'll stop throwing shade at Pepsi for this design debacle. But we'll wrap up with a little more discussion on this absolute crazy document that may or may not have been the pinnacle of human achievement. And if we have time, we can talk about the new 2023 Pepsi logo. Welcome back, everyone. I've collected myself a little bit after breaking out into some slightly crazy person laughter at all of my own jokes from before the break that honestly probably weren't all that funny. But let's get back into this with a slight recap. In 2008, Pepsi splurged $1 million on a new logo. This design of the new emblem channeled ideas of the golden ratio, Earth's magnetic field and gravitational pull, feng shui, and a lot of other totally over-your-head fields of knowledge. And while this document is like nothing I've ever seen before, you might be wondering if it's even legitimate. Well, it was released on Reddit, which is sometimes a less than reputable source for information. And while my confidence in some super large businesses and really the human race as a whole is about at a negative 20, I will admit that I do find it hard to believe that Pepsi would pay a company over $1 million if that's what they were legitimately given as a full-on design proposal. First of all, from what I know of design proposals, there's a lot more in there about color usage, like more than one page. There's more in there on font choices, which weren't even in this document. There's probably also iteration and options for the design as a whole, which we really only see here and there. So as someone in this line of work, there's a lot of things that I would expect to see in this document that just aren't there. And another thing to note is that this document is marked with a work in progress watermark. So most likely, even if it was legitimately the design pitch or part of the design pitch, this wasn't the final version that was presented to the higher-up Pepsi marketing directors. I would also think that if this were part of any kind of formal pitch to Pepsi, that there would be more to the whole pitch than just this document. It's kind of like how a PowerPoint presentation shouldn't contain the entire contents of a presentation. It's just there to supplement and provide visuals. Overall, if this really was what Arnell Group pitched to Pepsi, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that meeting room because I would have learned so much from just that one meeting. But yeah, I have real doubts that this document is real and contains much, if anything, that was in the formal proposal to Pepsi. Back in 2008, Peter Arnell had an interview with a news company called Ad Age, and he said, "There was a lot of research and a lot of consumer data points and dialogue that I had with the folks at Pepsi, consumers, and retailers. We knew what we were doing." A spokeswoman for Pepsi stood by Arnell Group and declined to comment on the document's authenticity or the online ridicule that it inspired. And she especially declined to comment about the logo's similarity to the 2008 Barack Obama campaign logo. But she made sure to voice continuous support for Arnell Group's work. So unless everyone is completely daft, there's no way this document is real. Not for a huge global brand like Pepsi. Keep in mind, not only was Pepsi paying Arnell Group $1 million+ for just the logo, but then you have the very real cost of removing the old logo from everything and replacing it with the new one. We're talking trucks, vending machines, billboards, stadium signage, point of sale materials, and so much more on a worldwide scale. Super rough guess here, but I'm thinking that could easily be several hundreds of millions of dollars. So Arnell Group's pitch had to be something that would not only sell Pepsi for $1 million on their work, but for $700 million more on a full-scale rebrand effort. Do you think that they would be silly enough to rely on this document to do that? I'm going to guess no. So then, why does this document exist? Well, we're here talking about it today, aren't we? If you're doing a brand refresh, especially one as expensive as this one, you want it to be noticed, right? What better way to get the public's attention than to stir the internet pot with a little joke? I was being sarcastic earlier when I asked why design work is so expensive when all it takes is a few clicks of a mouse to make a great logo, especially when it's a brand refresh and you already have something to start from. Well, if you think about it, this Pepsi document is almost like a big inside joke about design and the general public's perception that design is easy, so it should be cheap. Really, a lot of work goes into creating a great logo that's going to last and be the face for an entire company. Well, if people don't understand all of that work, guess what else a vast majority of the population doesn't understand? Do you see where I'm going with this? Even if Arnell Group did publish their actual pitch to Pepsi for this logo redesign, to most people, that legitimate pitch would make just about as much sense as this document did. And I'm not saying that the Arnell Group thinks we're all dumb. It's just a good laugh that still has people like me talking about it even 15 years later. But it has been 15 years, which brings us to 2023. I think I still have a bit of time to talk here, but I'll still make this bit quick since so many other people and news outlets are talking about the new Pepsi logo redesign that was just announced in early April. The redesign is part of the 125th anniversary and will roll out in North America in the fall and then globally in 2024. It's going to span across all physical and digital touchpoints, including packaging, trucks, and point of sale locations. Design-wise, the refreshed logo is both a step forward for the brand while also being a nod to its 70s and 80s iterations. Reading from my notes here, overall, some of the key design elements for this refresh include a new Pepsi globe and word mark that unites to fit into a variety of settings and emphasize the distinctive Pepsi branding, an updated color palette that introduced electric blue and black to bring contrast, vibrancy, and a contemporary edge to the Pepsi color scheme, a new visually distinct can silhouette, which heroes the iconic Pepsi can as an accessible brand for all, a modern custom typeface reflects the brand's confidence and unapologetic mindset. The signature Pepsi pulse evokes the ripple, pop, and fizz of Pepsi Cola with movement. It also brings the rhythm and energy of music, an important and continuing part of the Pepsi legacy. Okay, so some standard marketing speak in there, but as a designer, I can see and appreciate what they were trying to accomplish and do and how that appears in the final designs. Overall, I would say that I have some mixed feelings about this logo. I know I'm not a huge fan of change, or at least it takes me a minute to get comfortable with it, but I think I can say that I don't outright hate this logo. It's definitely bolder with the chunky beefcake of a font, and while it doesn't really break any design barriers or set any new design trends, I can see this logo becoming really iconic, especially with the new can designs. And I don't know how many people noticed this, but looking at the new can lineup graphic, did you notice that they put the Pepsi Zero Sugar can front and center? I thought that was very odd considering the classic Pepsi is the mainstay of their brand. Well, going back to how Pepsi is including more black in the logo, putting that Pepsi Zero Sugar can front and center really just highlights Pepsi's focus on their Pepsi Zero Sugar product and shows the brand's commitment to the Pepsi Zero Sugar product in the future. As for the text of the logo, I think the P's look a little weird, but overall, I'm kind of indifferent. Quick design history lesson here. In the early to mid-2000s, there was this huge design trend to make things more dimensional and realistic, which we can see in Pepsi's 2003 logo. And then in the 2010s, there was this design trend of flat and sleek minimalism where everything was streamlined and super clean, and it was definitely present in the 2008 logo design. Well, I think everyone's kind of fed up with everything being so, well, boring. It's literally called the blanding movement among designers because everything just became so bland, and all of the visual intrigue from that maximalist, intricate style of the late 90s and early 2000s had pretty much disappeared. Fast forward to 2023, and design trends are almost reverting to that more maximalist style. For Pepsi's redesign, that's maybe not in the logo itself, but I can start to see it in other brand visuals that we've seen a peek of, like their videos and some of their other graphics. I think what's giving me some pause is the use of the black. I see what they're doing with it. I appreciate the thought behind its ties to the Zero Sugar product, and it does help the logo stand out on basically anything you put it on, but I'm not quite sold yet. I found this story when researching, but what's interesting is that out of half a dozen logo concepts that the senior VP and chief design officer at Pepsi had been considering for the new branding, all except one of those designs used a blue word mark. Throughout months of working with the new design, he showed the design ideas to more people around the company, and it was the black iteration that always stood out, even though no one loved the design itself. The design team realized that people loved the concept because of the contrast, and that's why Pepsi refined the logo in black for the launch. I think as I see the logo in action more once the full launch is complete, or maybe even just seeing it in places in daily life, it'll help me get a better grasp of the logo and feel more comfortable with it, and maybe even learn to love it. Who knows? Only time will tell. But I think that about wraps up today's Artrageous episode. I hope you enjoyed a little of the craziness from today, and if you did, please let me know by leaving a 5-star review in your podcast app. If you have any feedback or topics you'd be interested in hearing me talk about on this show, feel free to send me an email at artrageous.artpod@gmail.com. I'll be back next Thursday with another episode, but until then, stay artrageous. Series music created by Arensen. Music and transition sounds licensed from Motion Array. Artrageous is a proud partner of Stoveleg Media.
Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.